97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Welcome back to the Mark Cox Morning Show. We are glad that you are with us this morning here. Mark Cox, along with Kim St. Ange and Ethan Bright. We'll get to Sue Thomas and all your traffic here in just a couple of minutes. Some cloudy skies out there. Good temperatures today. Looks like it's going to be a perfect weekend weather-wise. So that is a good thing. We've got that heat went away just in time. Although some heat is being applied over in Clayton, and because we got the word yesterday that the county executive is under indictment, and this, of course, is big news. And of course, a lot of this came about because of a citizen complaint, and the attorney general investigated it and took it to a grand jury. And now the county executive, Sam Page, is under indictment. And we have asked County Councilman Dennis Hancock to join us this morning to talk a little bit more about this. And Dennis, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Thanks, Mark. I'm doing well this morning and doing much better than yesterday.
Yeah, well, in light of this news, I mean, there were complaints about this flyer when it was put out. Correct me if I'm wrong, the county executive was kind of warned about this and went ahead anyway.
That's exactly right. The council actually advised him to not do that and gave him reasons why he couldn't do it. Primarily because there's nothing in the state statute that allow it to take a position on a ballot issue if you're a government. You can't do that. And he chose to do it himself and chose to spend taxpayer dollars to make his positions known. And that's just simply prohibited.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't really matter at this point if it is a dollar or $25,000 or $25 million. The dollar amount is not as important as the fact that things were done here, it appears, to avoid triggering any attention to this, like on the postage and the amount of money that was kept to so it didn't have to be bid out. I mean, that's troublesome.
Well, it absolutely is. And the fact that, that Dr. Page and his team went so far as to reduce the amount of postcards that were ordered so they wouldn't have to go out to bid means that they knew what they were doing was wrong, and they were trying very hard not to cross that line. And the whole thing just stinks to high heaven.
So does he doesn't have to resign, but did I hear you guys are having an emergency meeting tonight in light of this?
No, there's no meeting today. But you're right, Kim. He does not have to resign, and because at this point these are just allegations, and he's entitled to his day in court. There is a charter provision that was put in after Steve Stenger went through his nonsense. That if the county executive is convicted of a felony, he forfeits his office.
Yeah, which of course, I mean, anything about what he might be convicted on at this point is speculation. But a couple of these are misdemeanors, and then there's the felony. So you might have a situation where he could be cleared of the felony charge, but convicted on the misdemeanor charge, and then that statute wouldn't affect him. Hopefully the voters will wake up here at some point, Dennis, because this is two times in a row now that we've had Democrat county executives and both have ended up facing charges while in office.
That's exactly right. And I would hope that the voters would apply what I like to refer to as the Illinois rule. That if you have two in a row that are convicted of some crime, you switch to the other party at that point.
Well, let's hope. Let's hope so. Do you know anybody who's running for county executive, by the way?
Well, I think I am, Mark. I'm kicking my campaign off on August the 11th and hope that we get a good turnout. And I think that people are going to be taking a very serious look at the county executive's race going into next year. And who's running and the records of everyone involved, or at least I certainly hope they do.
Well, let's look at what's on the line here, because you've got Page has not made any secret of the fact before that he thinks, tax increases are on the horizon. And in the face of all of that, you talk about building a new city hall, our new county building, I should say, not city hall, county hall. There are major decisions to be made here, and all of this is just a big distraction.
I agree with you, Mark. I think that we do have some very, very serious decisions to make going forward over the course of the next year or two, and these are things that are going to impact the taxpayers. So we seem to have a very difficult time doing the basics of government. Potholes don't get filled, streets don't get plowed in the wintertime. There was a lot of publicity in the city about their performance this past winter. Well, the county's performance wasn't much better, but fortunately the city was more of a distraction and nobody was paying attention to the county. But we need to get our arms around just the basics of government. What are people paying their tax dollars for? They're paying for some basic services, and they're paying for police protection, and they're paying to make sure that the functions of government happen on a regular basis. We should be able to collect tax bills in January and process them in January, so people whose license tags are up in January can get their tags renewed. We found this past year that we couldn't do that. So those are basic things that we need to do as a county, and county government just simply doesn't seem capable of doing them under the Page administration.
Going back to the whole Page situation, and I know you're saying he doesn't have to resign, but I had heard that when Stanger was indicted, that a bunch of his staff members left. And so I'm just curious if you've heard of anybody already leaving. Have there been whispers of that? Because that would then leave some potentially high-level positions in the county government open, right?
Well, we've had some department heads who have left recently. The director of revenue left a month or two ago, and we don't know if he left because he got wind of this, or if he got a better offer someplace else. But we haven't heard of any wholesale exodus from the senior staff. And quite frankly, if we do, it's probably not a bad thing.
Yeah,
fair.
We would want to bring in some fresh blood, some fresh eyes, and make sure that things get done appropriately.
Very true. We got Dennis Hancock with us here. Dennis, just remind people one more time. I mean, timing is everything. You do have a kickoff for your run planned on, it's August 11th. Am I right about that?
That's correct. It's 6:00 at Helen Fitzgerald's in Sunset Hills, and we'd like to see a big turnout for that. And I believe we've got some well-known national celebrity who's going to be our MC for the event. So we look forward to kicking it off and seeing everybody there and making a solid run at the county executive. It's been 40 years since the last time St. Louis County elected a Republican.
And wow.
After the last couple of terms and what's happened, with most recently with Sam Page and with Steve Stanger, I think it's time for people to take a serious look at, what can we bring to the table and, make sure that, people are getting what they pay for in terms of, we want to be good stewards of their tax dollars and not just, waste them away and then tell them, give us more money because we can't manage what you already give us.
That's a great point. Dennis, I'll see you on the 11th. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.
You bet. Dennis Hancock, county councilman, running for county executive. And, we'll find out how this case goes for Page, but hopefully the voters are paying attention for sure. All right. Coming up, we're going to get to the one and only Shannon Bream, host of Fox News Sunday, and of course, chief legal correspondent there as well for Fox News. We'll get to all that. We got Griff Jenkins as well at about 8:30. Well, plenty of testimony to talk about this week and last. Obviously, we had what dropped with Tulsi Gabbard and John Ratcliffe on this issue with the Russian hoax story. And I don't know where this goes. I heard in that very interesting interview, of course, with John Solomon talking about Barack Obama in this situation. And right now, let's get to Shannon, please.
Shannon is gonna hurt.
Get up, baby! Get up!
There's only one Shannon.
Shannon Bream, host of Fox News Sunday. Shannon, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. I listened to John Solomon yesterday. Obviously, you know John and from Just the News. And he was pointing out the fact that because of that immunity ruling for President Trump, if Barack Obama has immunity and they called him to testify, he could not plead the Fifth. This thought had not even really crossed my mind, but that's an interesting dilemma.
Yeah, I mean, if you play things out to the end, that's certainly a possibility. And as you know, we are many steps away from there. But, you know, as these questions grow and as we get more information and more documentation, you know, there are multiple investigations going on now. So I am quite sure that the former president, a lot of folks in his inner circle, you know, have discussed these legal theories and defenses with their attorneys.
I know. A person I'd love to hear from is Kash Patel again.
Right.
There was a story circulating yesterday that he, you guys had reported on this, that he had turned up thousands of documents in a burn room. So documents that had been collected that were getting ready to be incinerated, and that among them were the Durham files that were filed, I guess, securely, separately from what was released to the public.
Yeah, and we have some folks internally also who have worked in, you know, national intelligence and national security have said to us, listen, there would be copies and things that would be held in different places. And some of this is protocol for the way that you properly go through and get rid of sensitive documents. So I've got a lot more questions and answers on that. But it certainly sparks, you know, questions about why are we just now finding this? Why was it segmented? What was the purpose? What was going to happen to these documents? And where are the other originals and things if they are being held safely somewhere else?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm trying to keep track of how many former Biden staffers have already been called to testify. Mm-hmm. I know the majority of them have just said, oh, I plead the Fifth. I mean, there's no limit here. They could just continuously keep calling these staffers, right?
They could. And so today we have another planned transcribed interview. So it's not sworn testimony in the way that the depositions have been, which is where you continually seem to get people taking the Fifth. But Mike Donilon, who was a top senior advisor to President Biden, would certainly be somebody you would expect would know how he was doing on a day-to-day basis, how he was making decisions or who was making decisions. So this is one of those voluntary transcribed interviews. And those seem to be the place that we do get most response from people. So it'll be interesting by the end of the day to get a readout on what he's got to say.
Yeah, Steve Ricchetti, I think, is the one, one of the ones that testified yesterday. And from what I've heard, it wasn't just a matter of I plead the Fifth answers to every question.
Right. And, you know, what we are hearing is that he was a little bit combative, sort of aggressive, as, you know, you would be if you're under the gun, maybe, and having to answer these questions. But he stuck with his position that President Biden was fully capable of running and also being president again for another 4 years. He said, you know, he made mistakes that everybody makes as they age. He said, you know, other presidents make mistakes and mess up names and leaders and that kind of thing, and you don't pounce on it. But from what we're getting from sources inside, apparently he really pushed back and said, nope, the president was good to go, and he stands by that.
Yeah, well, I won't put words in your – I won't make you comment on this, but he was one of the names that had been thrown around as maybe somebody who was making some of the decisions when Biden couldn't, right? Ricchetti. So, of course, he's going to be a little defensive on all that, I would think.
Yeah, because if there are questions now about auto pen use and who was signing off on things, and then that potentially dominoes into questioning the legality of those decisions, I can't imagine somebody on the inner circle is going to turn on the rest of them. I think you're probably going to get what you got yesterday. If somebody does talk, hey, he was fine, things were good. Or you're going to get, you know, when they're under a sworn deposition testimony, you're going to get the Fifth probably.
Yeah,
I mean, I imagine that whole auto pen thing is just going to take so long because there's so much that they would have to prove. Mm-hmm. And even if they do feel like, OK, we have enough evidence to move forward with this, who would then make that decision to overturn the pardon?
Yeah, that's the question, because these would be new novel legal questions to most people. I mean, that's not something that we've seen challenged before. The question of whether a president was in his full faculties, signed off on something, didn't sign off on. It feels like short of an admission by somebody on that inner circle, like, yeah, we did make some decisions that maybe he wasn't 100% aware of or fully on board with. And I can't imagine you get that admission. I don't know how you prosecute a case short of that.
Shannon, I don't know if we warned you about this question or not, but the Pelosi Act debate yesterday mm-hmm. has caught our attention here in Missouri because the president is calling out Josh Hawley, one of our Missouri right. senators. The question here seems to be, even in the bill they passed, correct me if I'm wrong, the president, the vice president were carved out of that, so they wouldn't be affected by it. But what they were calling for was an investigation specifically into Nancy Pelosi, and that's what Hawley voted against, which apparently is what irritated the president, from what I can tell.
Yeah, and you know, the president does not have a thought, I think, that goes unexpressed when he comes down with somebody on Capitol Hill. and we did see Senator Hawley say last night, like, listen, I'm going to talk to him. We're going to iron this out. We're going to figure this out. I mean, he'd referred to Senator Hawley as a second-tier senator. But it appears that Hawley didn't take the bait. I mean, the last, you know, kind of quote I saw from him in the dust-up last night talking to one of our reporters was essentially, I'm going to talk to the White House. We're going to get this all worked out. I think the president's going to be happy.
The president generally... They put their stuff in a blind trust, right? I mean, it's not like Donald Trump's calling his broker every day making stock trades.
Right. I don't think he's like on his TDBank.com logging in and making decisions. I mean, and there are protections that are supposed to be in place. And people ask questions about what about spouses? What about children? What about other family members or staff members who could direct things or have their own, you know, trades going on? Would they have insider information? So it's been one of those things that over the years has had some bipartisan support that the average American's like, listen, I don't have the information you guys have. I can't make these same deals and decisions. So let's just make it clear that there are lines drawn and that you're on the same level playing field as we are.
I'm sure Nancy Pelosi will come on this weekend and talk to you about that, right?
Always an open invitation to the Speaker Emerita.
She pushed
she's
back.
She's going to come.
She pushed
and listen,
back on Tapper.
You know, I don't know if we've talked about it, but there is a guy who put together a group where they started just trading whatever Nancy Pelosi does.
Yeah.
And they've made a ton of money. And this guy's like, we've invited her. We want to talk to her. But it apparently mirrors whatever trust or whatever decision grouping she's got. And they say they've really outdone the market by just following those trades.
Wow.
The Pelosi Index Fund. That's right.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Shannon, we'll be watching on Sunday. Thank you very much.
We'll see you then.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate that. How about that? The Pelosi Index Fund. Let's just mimic anything Nancy does.
Wow.
So I wonder how they do that. Like they find out that Paul Pelosi put in a big trade. You immediately do the same thing? How do you know that?
Is that all open information?
I didn't think so. But
let's have an inside scoop there with someone with the family.
All right. Coming up, we'll find out what in the world Griff Jenkins, our buddy, is up to today. Stay tuned.
I think it was the right call. I do think it means she's going to run. I fully expect her to run for president again. She's young. She's been sort of running and in political office her entire adult life.
Yeah. In Kyiv, Ukraine, Griff Jenkins, Fox News. Along the southern border, Griff Jenkins, Fox News. At the White House, Griff Jenkins, Fox News. In St. Louis, Griff Jenkins, Fox News.
Tell me where in the world is
Griff Jenkins.
Watch your back.
On a Lime scooter, I understand. Is this
Good
correct?
Good morning, Mark. You never know where you're going to catch me. I'm literally standing next to a Lime scooter that I'm about to ride to the White House because I'm going to be in the White House this afternoon. And I found out the hard way that you can't have a Lime scooter rented on your phone and talk at the same time. It won't let you. So I am setting aside the rush into the White House, but I've got my scooter ready to go, and pretty soon it'll be, you know, the modern commuting male just going to the White House for work. Because I was telling Kim, I ride a Lime scooter whenever I've got to work the White House because there's nowhere to park, and strangely, they don't drop me off and ferry me back and forth on a helicopter that lands on the South Lawn. That's only apparently for one guy.
You can avoid gridlock that way. We once rode a Segway from downtown Washington over to Georgetown. It was a beautiful ride. So you've got some beautiful scenery to look forward to.
I got to tell you, I've been here since the mid-90s, and it never gets old.
It
doesn't. You know, riding past the monuments, riding past the buildings, and, of course, the honestly, honor and privilege, no matter who's president, to ride up and get off and walk into the White House.
Yeah, plus you get to ride past all the tents for the homeless that have popped up all over the place.
Well, you do, but, you know, that's interesting, Mark. Let me tell you, you're seeing less and less of that, and it all began back in, I believe, April, when I actually was covering it one day, when Trump, President Trump, told the D.C. Mayor, Muriel Bowser, get the encampments out, clear them out, and she got on board.
Wow.
And she, of course, said, oh, we were already planning on trying to do that to move them into more affordable housing. But she's on, I mean, we quietly are calling her MAGA Muriel here in D.C. because she first started moving out the encampments. They're still here, don't get me wrong, but far less than what we saw a year ago and during the Biden years. And then she also has gotten on board. Remember, she just took a sledgehammer to the Black Lives Matter monument there, right just a block away from the White House on 16th Street. And right now, she's trying to get us a new stadium built. We'll see if she gets behind President Trump's push to rename the Commanders back to the Redskins.
I love that.
Yeah, I mean, some of these people who are complying, like Muriel Bowser, do you think that they're actually starting to see the light, or you think it's just they know that Trump will make them do it eventually?
No, I do, actually. I do. And I'll give you another example. Muriel Bowser put in her budget a month or so ago a stipulation that specifically made sure that the language does not designate D.C. as a sanctuary city. And so while you have these sanctuary cities like New York and others that are, you know, being sued by the DOJ because of their status, L.A., Boston, Chicago, that refuses to cooperate with ICE in any way, Muriel Bowser is changing her tune. And, you know, she's been a politician for quite some time here. I think there really is writing on the wall that, you know, there's not everything bad. Like, just running on Trump bad, end of democracy, threats of democracy, like, that ship sailed, and it's not a winning hand for Democrats to play. I think she sees that.
You don't want that target on your back, right? So, unlike other mayors in these big blue cities, her budget is ultimately determined by Congress. The last thing she wants is Trump to turn his fire onto her or the budget for Washington, D.C.
That's exactly right. Spot on. And it also allows her, if she's playing nice on these other things like sanctuary cities, homeless, and whatnot, she can pick and choose her battles when she needs to fight them. And the real battles are when it comes to budgetary matters.
You know, I was listening. I played that bite yesterday for Kamala deciding not to run for office. She's not going to do it, Griff. She's not going to run for office in California. But a lot of people think it's because she's just preparing for another run for president in 2028.
Yeah, I think it came as no surprise, to be honest. And, you know, maybe she's gearing up for 2028. That, of course, is the speculation. And she is still, even though the leading candidates, whether it's Kamala Harris or Buttigieg or Gavin Newsom, no one really has a clear lead. But she's in the top few, and so maybe that's it. Or maybe she is exercising some political wisdom, seeing the damage that Governor Gavin Newsom did to his state, and said, I don't want to inherit that. That's a losing hand to play, much like when my boss, Joe Biden, handed me the Border Czar title and he opened up the border to millions to come across illegally.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point, but that always brings this to mind as well. Never gets
don't
old.
Don't make great Griff keep listening to that.
It never gets old. And remember, we just had a week ago, she, of course, addressed this Gen Z young Democrat voter summit here in Washington. And what does she do? She phones in a pre-taped two-minute video. And when I saw that, I was like, is the campaign still in operation?
Yeah, no kidding.
That's the kind of stuff that spanks of being not fully engaged, not meeting people where they are, inauthenticity, and really a lot of the signature mistakes that you just don't see campaigns making. So I don't know what her future is, but whether it's for 2028 or something else, that's maybe not a good start. She should have showed up. And to her, you know, credit, she would have been somewhat of a nostalgic rock star, perhaps the young Democrats who would see her in person. Instead, they got the infomercial 2 minutes on video in what looked like an AI-generated thing.
Griff, what are you going to be covering at the White House this afternoon? Obviously, today, tomorrow is the deadline for tariffs to go back up. There's still a few countries that have not inked the deal yet.
Yeah, it's tariffs, tariffs, tariffs. And then I suspect that I'll probably touch a little bit on the fact that you saw yesterday a dozen House Democrats led by Congressman Espaillat, who is the chairman of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, sued the Trump administration over access to detention centers, which I reached out as soon as I saw it late yesterday afternoon to Tricia McLaughlin, the spokeswoman at DHS. I said, "You got a statement on this?" Said, "Yeah, hang on." And about 60 seconds later, she wrote me a statement that says, "Yeah, we have a open policy, just book an appointment. Thanks." But yet this lawsuit, and Espaillat leading the lawsuit, is saying that the blocking of Democrat oversight access on a whim's notice is a, quote, threat to democracy. So there it is, that catchphrase that I think most of the country just aren't buying.
Yeah. Griff, listen, be safe on your scooter travel there, please, in D.C.
Yes, listen, for all of our listeners who may come and visit the great nation's capital, I encourage getting around online scooters fun, but go slow, be mindful, be careful, because I do see every now and then people wipe out. So hopefully I'll have a safe ride there and a safe ride home.
I'm sure. We'll talk to you soon, buddy. Thank you.
Hey, guys, tune in this weekend, by the way. I'll be back on the couch for Fox and Friends weekend.
Outstanding, Griff. We always watch. We love that. Thank you very much. Last time I was there, when I was there with Carl a couple years ago for that immigration conference, it was a lot of fun. And they have motorized bikes, like motor assists, but those are always gone. And then they have the scooters and they have regular bicycles. And at some point, Carl and I just rented regular bicycles from Lime, and we rode all over D.C. up and down the to the Lincoln Memorial and back up to the Washington Monument. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's funny that's just such a common way to get around versus here.
Sure,
you would not see that.
Well, and there are parts of D.C. you certainly don't want to do that at night. And there are parts of D.C. that are safer than others, like Georgetown, which is, I believe, over there where Griff lives. He's like, thank God we bought a house here 30 years ago, because today we wouldn't be able to afford it. I mean, it's crazy, the real estate prices.
Oh, yeah.
But if you ever go there, I'll give you this recommendation. There is a bike path. If you go past the Washington Monument, or the Lincoln Memorial, I should say, down by the river, there's a bike path you can access down there that goes all along the river, all the way down to Georgetown. And it's beautiful. There's a little marina down there with restaurants. It sits right on the river. They do dinner cruises and stuff out of there. You don't have to do that, but you can sit out there and have a cocktail or food on a nice day when it's not 100 degrees. And it's just beautiful. I highly recommend that for people that are heading to D.C. for whatever the reason may be. That was a nice surprise when we discovered that. Just completely at random, to be honest. All right, we'll be back here in just a minute. Stay tuned.
And that while these deals, in the narrow short-term sense, look like a win for Trump, it's harder to make the case that they are a win for the United States or the world in the long run.
It's just so, you can just expect it, right? When Chuck Schumer rolls out the BS that he did yesterday, you've got members in the media that are never Trumpers, like this Greg Ip guy that I listened to this morning on the show that precedes us. They had an interview with him. He's an economics reporter for the Wall Street Journal. I don't know how you can be an economics reporter and not look at what's happened here and realize that the economy is doing fine, and the tariffs are going to be like jet fuel on that economy. I mean, it's going to benefit the American people. It's going to benefit American businesses. But then you have to listen to stuff like this from Chuck Schumer. Go to cut three.
And while the Trump administration will try to wave rosy headlines about the Q2 number, today's GDP number is, in fact, a mirage, because some ominous numbers lurk under the hood.
There's some ominous numbers because people like Chuck Schumer they root against America. And that's the thing. They become the enemy of America succeeding. They don't want America to succeed, because when America succeeds, it makes it much harder for them to push their socialist Democrat policies. Forget the guy in New York. We got our hands full in the House and the Senate with people like Chuck Schumer. So then you've got their contemporaries in the media like this Greg Epp. I did a little research on this guy. He's never said a positive thing about Donald Trump in any of his reporting that I can see. And you know who he's worried about? He's worried about the world. This is what Greg Epp is worried about with this new deal we struck with the EU. Listen to this.
And in time, what you'll see is that when countries enter deals that they don't particularly like, they have incentives to reduce their exposure to that. You will probably see other countries, as they face these barriers to doing business with the United States, they'll build up sales and markets in other countries, strike deals with other countries. They will become less dependent on the United States. It's great that as in response to Trump's pressure, they're building up their military. But for the same reason, that means that in the future, they will be less susceptible to Trump's military pressure. And to the extent that these deals are hurting their economies, it is simply giving fuel to populists in countries like Germany, Netherlands, Britain, France, who want to essentially go even further and completely abandon international trade and globalization and retreat behind borders. Mm. So
everything about Trump winning, when Trump won, the EU got nothing. Trump got everything he wanted. And they're like, well, you know, this is not really a deal. This is not really like a traditional deal, this guy tries to argue, because eventually our trading partners are going to get tired of this. How about us, Greg? We've been doing this since the 1940s. We've been giving away everything to the world since the 1940s. We finally have an American president who cares about the American people, who says, we're done being the bully, being the victim here, and we're going to use the fact that we weigh 900 pounds and have the best economy, and everybody wants to do business with us. You're going to even the playing field, or we're not playing anymore. So his worries about NATO, well, good. I'm glad you're giving the full 5% that you deserve for your own defense. The United States is not going to subsidize that anymore. And you wait till these countries, which are all represented by the European Union, try to start pulling their economies away from the United States. That's not going to work. It's not going to work at all. And I just hate doomsayers like this in the mainstream media out there acting like he's an economic expert. And Donald Trump wins at every turn. So good for him. This is all good news.
You know what we need for a drop? Winning.
Winning. I used to have that on here. I'll have to look for it again. The Donald Trump said winning. We'll find that for you for sure. All right. Stick around. Of course, Brian Kilmeade in here every morning at 9 a.m. And we'll have the Annie Fry Show and the Mark Reardon Show after that, rounding out the day. And, of course, Kim and Ethan and Sue and I will see you back here on Friday morning, starting at 5 a.m. If you can't join us that early, you can always download the podcast. Have a great day.
Get more at 971talk.com.